Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, everyone, to A Mexican Crossing Lines with your hosts, Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And tonight, on my show, titled Love and Solidarity with Pueblos Sin Fronteras, PSF for short, I'm going to be talking about why I think that's not a very good idea right now, this love and solidarity. There is definitely an attempt on the part of the activists or pseudo-activists, as I call them, involved in the Caravan Support Network that are throwing their lot together. And I showed you on my last show who some of these groups are: No More Deaths, Pueblos Sin Fronteras, Al Otro Lado, etc., and the Tohono O'odham tribe, and the Carrizo Come Crudo tribe, and the Border Support Network activists, pseudo-activists. And I also talked about, what's on the horizon for some of those folks, how they're getting arrested, detained, questioned, investigated for their connections to this smuggling operation. And tonight, I'm going to dive deeper and talk more about Alex Mensing's posting and messaging and the other groups in solidarity with Pueblos Sin Fronteras that are making the case in the media with their media allies, are making the case that they are being criminalized, that they are being unfairly monitored and investigated by our government, that they are being targeted. The Fourth Amendment doesn't exist anymore. We're losing all of our rights. They even had AOC retweeting them, saying much the same thing, that our rights in America are being eroded. Sound the alarm. And I'm going to show you what's really behind these groups that are all in solidarity, what they're connected to and what they've been doing, why this messaging about how they're the persecuted victims because they're helping the brown people, they're helping the migrants, and their, overlay of calling this racist and xenophobic behavior and saying that this administration or the law enforcement authorities involved in these investigations are purely being racists. Why this has been successful so far for them, why it's been a strategy that they've been using. But I'm going to uncover for you, all the way going back to Standing Rock, how they used this strategy before and how it can sometimes backfire big time, like in the case of Jenny Monet, who was recently arrested. And I'm going to cover everything about her arrest and her connections to Standing Rock. So stay tuned. It's going to be an amazing show. But first, I wanted to thank all of you who have sent me information, some of which I used in today's program. Keep it coming. I really appreciate your messages, your emails, your comments, your suggestions, and of course, your support. Duke, how can people follow us and support our work?
Well, thank you very much for supporting us and following us and watching our Facebook Lives and listening to our show locally on the radio. We take these shows and we put them on a local broadcast on the radio. Many of them go up. We just edit the audio a little bit for that, and we put our other videos on our website. But if you want to get hold of us, you can always give us a call and leave a message on our message line, 701-566-0917. Again, that number is 701-566-0917. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or me, Duke, at kpppfm.com. And you can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. You can find Cindy's public page at Cindy Go Shemp and go to kpppfm.com. Like I said, that's a place where we put up our shows. I think I have one behind. I think it was yesterday's show isn't up there yet. But we put the videos up, and we use the YouTube channel for our videos. It's Duke1517. I'd appreciate if people would go to our YouTube channel and go to Duke1517 or Duke Gomez Shemp and subscribe. We're trying to reach 1,000 subscribers so we can try some new things on YouTube. We're still going to stick with Facebook, Facebook Lives. We tend to reach an audience across the nation and internationally in other countries. We don't have as big of a following on YouTube, and we'd like to create one. So go to YouTube and go to Duke1517. That's your channel's name. Or just look for my name, Duke Gomez Shemp. Now, when you go to our website at kpppfm.com, you can look around and see some of our history. Remember, we're a nonprofit low-power FM radio station. Well, we're licensed by the FCC, and we broadcast in the Fargo-Moorhead region. We reach up to close to 200,000 people in this community. So we have different opportunities for you. One, that we're asking you to donate, because since we are a nonprofit, we can't advertise. But we do what's called underwriting. So if you make a donation to our station, it's tax-deductible. You'll get a receipt, and it'll go towards the operations of the station. We're trying to give you the best quality we can, and we're starting to improve some things. We're still working on it. I mean, this green screen thing and the lighting, you know, we're using old shop lights and stuff we have around. We need to purchase some good equipment, have better lighting, and look a little bit softer on the screen. We've got our microphones taken care of, and that's thanks to you. We really appreciate donations. You can just go to kpppfm.com/donate, make a donation. Also, if you want to do what's called underwriting, it's kind of like advertising, but it's technically not. We could put a piece on our radio station, and you make a tax-deductible contribution, and your name or your business will be put on the air and for people to hear and to drive them towards your business. Maybe you have something that a website is something important to drive people to. That could be on our radio station, and you can make a donation, it's tax-deductible, and receive an underwriting advertisement on our station. It's a great way to promote your business and have ears that might not have heard of you and reach a new audience and help us. You know, help us make a difference in the community. So thank you very much. And I'm going to go back to Cindy.
Thank you very much. I'm going to jump right into tonight's show. And, you know, I like to bring you their own words, their own posts, their own videos, so that people who are, you know, unaware of the activities of these pseudo-activists can see in their own words what they're up to. Here's a post by Alex Mensing where they're talking about the solidarity in the movement, and he is tagged Irineo Mujica, the leader of Pueblos Sin Fronteras that has been arrested in Mexico and is being investigated along with a whole bunch of other people that I showed you on previous shows, by Interpol, by the Department of Homeland Security, by Border Patrol, by Mexican authorities, etc., etc., etc. And he said, I am up late at night organizing documentation of the criminalization, defamation, hate mail, and death threats that I and others with Pueblos Sin Fronteras have received as a result of our migrant rights defense work. I don't think that's the reason why. Huh. I think it's because of your smuggling operation.
Yeah, exactly.
I have been going through Pueblos Sin Fronteras' Facebook messages because I remember some of the threats we received via this social media platform. However, what's really struck me in the last hours is the incredible outpouring of messages from people offering solidarity, asking questions, looking for lost loved ones, offering to volunteer their legal, medical, and other services, offering to send donations of food, medicine, clothes, and even Canadian quilts, and even just saying thank you for what we do. In this world, we spend so much time focusing on what's wrong. Sometimes I forget to take a moment to be grateful and happy about all the wonderful people and projects out there. I'm sad that during the caravans, our small crew is often so overwhelmed by on-the-ground defense and emergency work that we were unable to respond to many of these sincere positive communications, inquiries, and offers for support. I trust that everyone dedicated to finding a way to support found a way to do so, even if our crew was unable to channel everyone's interests at the time. Thank you to everyone who's reaching out to support in any way, in any of many ways, over the last few years. I'm sorry if I never responded, but I'm glad you reached out, and I hope you found a way to plug in. There's always lots to do, whether it be on the border or in your neighborhood. And then he tags a person named Tristan and says, recently, Tristan pointed out that many of those who ventured to go to the border to support the caravans are discovering, as we did over the years, many ways to support people through the often terrible U.S. immigration detention process court process and the challenging process of rebuilding a life after fleeing the one they had and looking for ways to challenge that system. I agree with Tristan that this is happening on a larger scale than we may be aware, and hopefully will grow and join the wider immigrant rights movement and change it for the better. Thanks to Ian, it's Ian Philibaum, who he tags there, for encouraging me to share this thought, which I shared with him in a late night What's Up conversation. Okay, so they're talking about solidarity and how they're being criminalized once again. Woe is me. But I want to show you who was, posting also a video for Al Otro Lado. You can see a screen capture of this video here where he says, for more information, email Al Otro Lado. And you can see that's from his Facebook page, Alex Mensing. And what they were asking for there is court observers. They wanted court observers. You can see at the very bottom of that a little tiny bit of the text, way, way at the very bottom, where it says about looking for court volunteers for court observers. And that's what they were asking for, because they are now saying that they need these court observers to come in and make sure that the court system isn't being unfair. Okay. So Alex Mensing also posted this request for Pueblos Sin Fronteras with a video that says, hello, everyone. Got any tents to donate? As you may know, Pueblos Sin Fronteras set up a soup kitchen around the corner from Barretal when it was being used by the government to hold caravan members. And the soup kitchen transitioned into a shelter. It's a very modest shelter, but has provided additional space for migrants in a time when many Tijuana shelters are full. I'm writing because people at the Pueblos Sin Fronteras shelter in Tijuana need sleep in tents, and many of those tents have begun to deteriorate. The zippers don't work anymore, and some have holes in them. If anyone has extra tents, they could donate so that people can sleep a bit warmer and with more privacy. They would be greatly appreciated if you can help. Please reach out to me, Jeff, or Nelly. Also, check out this rad video of the crew at the vigil in support of No More Deaths in Tijuana. So this they held a vigil to support the trial of Scott Warren, the guy that was in my show yesterday that is being charged with harboring and transporting migrants in the desert. And so have other volunteers from No More Deaths. And I showed you that a group of them, I can't remember if it was 6 or 9 or 7, have already been found guilty. This trial for Scott Warren just started yesterday. And along with his plea for donations for this Pueblos Sin Fronteras shelter, they posted this video of the folks that you see there on this screen capture. Here it is. This is the vigil, guys. Didn't sound like a vigil I've been to. Here you go. They were singing about... They were singing a song about leaving in a caravan.
Okay.
And as you could see, they were dancing, and that's a strange looking vigil to me. I don't know.
Really, it looked like a party to me.
Yeah. Have you? They were right in front of the beach in Playas de Tijuana. You've seen this?
Yeah, I've been there.
It's the backdrop to my show right now.
Exactly.
You can see in my background here. Mm-hmm. It's exactly where they are. Right. Mm-hmm. You've been to that location with me and Oscar when we went there recently to report.
Yes.
Is that place a place where the poor migrants and refugees are all hanging out?
No, that's a place for tourists, and it's a place where people hang and party down. And there's coffee shops and bars and
restaurants,
and people hang out till late at night there and walk on the boardwalk. And there's music, there's bands playing, there's celebrations that happen there. There's a community square, you know. So it's like, people are hanging there. It's a place to go for like a tourist destination.
Yeah, that's where they had their vigil.
Wow.
So Alex Mensing has on his friends list, among other people, if you look here, you can see over there on, under the friends category, that there are a number of people that we've talked about on my show, including Christina Mansfield, who is one of the funders of Pueblos Sin Fronteras. Gina Garibo, which is one of the people that escorted people along with Alex Mensing and many of the other people I've highlighted on my show. And of course, there's Ian Philibaum that was tagged. There's Elena Ackerman, which I've also shown in my shows before. And Joshua Nichols. If you will recall, Joshua Nichols was one of the activists that was holed up with the migrants that were at Viento y Marea, that had that standoff with the police for 6 days. And they were hanging out with the other... Here's a post that he made of that from that time. Joshua posted in It's Going Down, which I think is a blog that they were using that he probably was writing for, among others. And in the article that he posted here, The Siege of the Autonomous Migrant Shelter in Tijuana, It's Going Down, he wrote, here is a good roundup of what I got myself into. And I want to also remind you guys that he was inside of the shelter with the migrants and the other Caravan Support Network people, Border Support Network people, including Kiara Horsley, a.k.a. Lilith Sinclair. Here is a post that he made on his birthday where he is talking about thanking people for their well wishes and posting that this is his third night in the lockdown in the shelter that they're supposed to be evicted from for health code violations. He said that he's going to stay inside the shelter until the police leave and restore free access to the space. That didn't happen, by the way, folks. The migrants decide to leave as a unified group. Many of them were taken out, or when, you know, when they left, they were not allowed to return, like many of the activists. Or I am arrested, he says. And he said that he's just there to observe human rights of migrants are not violated. Now, he was a translator, but he was a bad translator. And they definitely had their own agenda, right?
Right.
Also, the presence of international people puts pressure on the police to not raid or mistreat people. He said that the little news that has come out about this has unsurprisingly painted the situation as people looking to incite chaos. Yes, that's because that is what these folks do. But they want you to believe that they're not doing anything wrong, even though Joshua Nichols and Evan Duke are all connected to anarchist, anti-fascist groups like By Any Means Necessary, the founder of which is Yvette Falarca. And you can see, as I've shown you in past shows, that many of these activists are close to Yvette Falarca, or friends with Yvette Falarca. Here, you can see on his Facebook page that he is indeed friends with Yvette Falarca. And again, these folks are not afraid to use violence. They say they were going to force the border to be opened by any means necessary, and that they were going to shut down the crossing at the border crossing in Tijuana unless they allowed all of the caravan to come in. So recently, the most recent post on Joshua Nichols's page is by Lilith Sinclair, and it tags 91 other people, including Deborah Norton. And what they're talking about here is the border security checkpoints. Why? Because they don't want them, and they don't need them, and they don't like that they have to go through them. Lilith says, this is Kiara Horsley, here's a post on the state of increased militarization on the border. Notice the messaging. Mm-hmm. It's all very similar. There's so much criminalization. The border hasn't changed. I've been crossing it since I was a child. It's always been this way. People at the border, whether it's when you're going into Mexico or when you're coming into the United States, have the right to check you, question you, put you into secondary, take all of your stuff out of your car, out of your suitcase. They've done it to me many times. I don't have a cow and I don't appear in a newspaper anywhere. But they try to make it seem like this is un-American and blah, blah, blah. This is a process that has existed for a very long time. These folks think they shouldn't have to follow the rules or the laws like everyone else. So they're posting about it and making this, you know, mountain out of a molehill, saying that this is a post about the increased militarization of the border to the point that we have checkpoints and questioning of citizens over an hour away from the border. We're wasting so much money keeping these checkpoints staffed to bother citizens and install fear in brown people and anyone else who doesn't look American. There it is. There it is. Those checkpoints are racist, and so is the wall, and so is all the money that we're spending on these checkpoints. It's just about racism.
Yeah.
If anyone doesn't want to be tagged in these kinds of posts, please feel free to let me know in the comments at any time or in a text or private message. Also, heads up, if you can share it, if you'd like to like or still be tagged, and just turn off post notifications as soon as you've seen it. And then it shows pictures of a border checkpoint, and it's got, pictures of a, why don't you describe it?
Oh, yeah, it's got dogs, cats living together.
Dogs and cats.
There's actually no people there. So there's a guard with a dog. There's a guy standing in the booth with a stop sign, and I don't even see any people there. So it wasn't a very busy day at that checkpoint.
I don't think so, no. And it was interesting because the people that were tagged in this post are let's go to Lilith post full download, if we could, real quick. I want to skip over Joshua Nichols's post real quick and still go to the full post. Yes. Lilith posted here. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you will see in the comments of this post that this was posted from Activism Actually, and it says a conversation, and this is Activism Actually was Lilith Sinclair's little and Joshua Nichols' little brainchild page where they had all of these posts about the caravan. A conversation with a Customs and Border Patrol agent at the border checkpoint near Encino, Texas, a full hour and 30 minutes north of the actual border. And this is how much we have militarized our border checkpoints, enough that we have armed CBP agents. They've always been armed.
Yeah.
K-9 units stopping every car, counting north, continuing north into the country and questioning them on their citizenship and why they're exercising their right to document law enforcement in a public place. This is the conversation. Notice how they like to have these conversations when they're questioned at the border.
Yeah, yeah.
Border Patrol agent, are you taking pictures?
Yep.
Are you taking pictures of me?
Yep.
Why are you taking pictures?
Because I wanted to.
Why are you taking pictures of me?
I've never been through here before. I wanted to take some pictures.
I'm not very photogenic.
Stares at them with a smile on my face. I beg to differ.
Where are you going?
North of San Antonio.
Everybody American?
Yep.
Anyone in the back of the car here?
Nope.
All right. Waves us forward. Okay, have a good day. Didn't sound like it was a confrontational thing.
it sounds pretty easy to me.
And it says, we are currently on our way. So there's more than one activist in the vehicle. Currently on our way north from the indigenous founded border village, Yowley Village, set up to protect sacred lands being encroached upon by the construction of Trump's xenophobic border wall. Tomorrow we'll be covering an action at the Texas State Capitol. And we know that Lilith Sinclair was at that Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
We showed you that before. The indigenized Texas Capitol action will be happening tomorrow in Texas. This is past tense. This has already all happened, by the way.
Right.
And if you scroll down even further, you'll notice on this post, some of the people commenting, they got to abolish ICE, demilitarize the border, keep going, all the way down. You got some of the people that are commenting on this post. And if you keep scrolling down, you'll see that some of these people are to include people that are at these camps. There's a helicopter, and we also have Joe Plouffe, which is from the, you know, Carrizo Come Crudo camp. We've got Mason Bobby Leonard, who's one of the drone pilots down there, posting videos of him surveilling the Border Patrol in the area. And check out these tags on this post. This is Lilith Sinclair's post tags from the post. And you can see Joshua Nichols, Monsias is tagged. You can see Joe Plouffe. You can see Jamie Skapowski. She's one of the people on that list that is being investigated. And, you know, it's the same crew with Evan Duke. Same crew. And folks, these folks aren't, you know, just being flagged and investigated by Department of Homeland Security and Border Patrol. They're also being flagged by Interpol. Here's Joshua Nichols' post where he says that his passport is flagged by Interpol. It says, on April 30th, the U.S. government put an Interpol flag, edit, more specifically, it is most likely what they call a diffusion, similar to the color-coded flags but less formal, on my passport for helping migrants, effectively blocking my entry into Mexico, likely into all countries. As many of you know, Mexico has been my home for nearly 3 years. My friends, my community, my life is here. I've got a long fight ahead of me, but it won't stop me from defending the vulnerable. So Interpol definitely is involved. I've shown you many of them raise their hands and tell you so themselves. And this support for helping the migrants, I've shown you how they fund it through GoFundMes and their Venmos and all these other campaigns. But I want to show you from the San Diego Craigslist, they're now hiring people for campaign jobs to build the movement. This is political in nature. And this is a picture of a woman wearing a bandana with fighting bad guys since 19 something. I can't read the back of it. And it's an Amnesty International jacket.
Yep.
Obviously, this is organized by Amnesty International. The compensation is $16 to $19 an hour plus bonuses, and the job is full-time, folks. Organization overview, it's called The Outreach Team is a progressive company that works with nonprofit organizations to run grassroots campaigns for social change nationwide. In our San Diego office, we are managing outreach and fundraising campaign efforts on behalf of Amnesty International, the world's largest human rights advocacy organization. Our work is focused on making a global impact and fighting for refugee rights with Amnesty International's I Welcome campaign. The position is they're seeking membership engagement staff to join their San Diego team, and they are going to make a difference on issues. Says, we are on the front lines of some of the most critical social change movements in the world. On our team, your voice and your ideas matter and make a real difference. Join our team on the ground floor to continue new ideas, test new methods of fundraising and mobilization, and drive meaningful social change. This is, they even get paid time off for sick vacation and personal leave. Do you remember where we saw Amnesty International? At Standing Rock?
Oh, yeah, they're at Standing Rock. Yeah, definitely. All these big organizations were there. They were testing the ground. They were, like, putting stuff out. And, you know, they have to continue on, and they're working at this capacity now.
Exactly. But it just goes to show you that Standing Rock was very much a testing ground for these activists' campaigns. And they also raised for the caravans, they've raised a lot of money, the groups that are in solidarity with Pueblos Sin Fronteras, like Al Otro Lado. In this post by Kara Lynham, who's a lawyer that went to the border and was volunteering with Al Otro Lado. She posted on May 6th, I went to Tijuana in December and I witnessed CBP, notice the narrative, it's all the same, violating the law and the lengths they go to prevent asylum seekers, including a three-year-old, from asking for asylum at a port of entry. This new Immigration Nation episode is my candid reflection of what I saw. I was extraordinarily lucky to be with some of the best immigration attorneys in the Western Hemisphere. Well, I think that's,
that's a little bit.
Really? Okay, well, here are their names. This is the important part. Christina Brown, Anna Patrots Acosta, Ava Banach, Nicole Ramos, Albaricon Coque, Isis Negron, Anna Joseph, and Andrew Free. Two members of Congress, U.S. Representative Nanette Barragan and Representative Jimmy Gomez, were also there to ask CBP why they weren't processing asylum claims. And amazing advocates like Sage Martin Moore and Pablo Badra were also with us. Al Otro Lado and Families Belong Together provided critical support to the asylum seekers and volunteers. Remember I told you that Families Belong Together, Paola Mendoza, one of the co-founders of the Women's March, was at this border crossing with Al Otro Lado, Nicole Ramos, and also Mark Lane of the Minority Humanitarian Foundation, which runs shelters on the Tijuana side of the border, and also are connected to the people that run the shelters on the San Diego side of the border. So it's a big, long chain, right? And they all work together. They make it seem like they're not all working together. They're not all, you know, helping each other move these people through Central America and then into these United States. But they are. And now I wanted to show you the firsthand account from their Immigration Nation page where she talks about what she was doing there. Listen to this. Oh, at first I wanted to show you that she also raised money for her. She didn't just tell a story in the news on her podcast show. Here's a video that she did on Facebook where she was raising money and she had a bunch of lawyers on there that are tagged here. It says, hey, GoFundMe raised $105,000 for Al Otro Lado and the kids at the Tijuana shelter waiting to ask for asylum. So here is the GoFundMe post where she's thanking. This is Kara Lynam. That's what she actually looks like. The other picture you just saw was one of the other lawyers in the group of people that was there with Al Otro Lado. And she says, hey, GoFundMe, we raised $105,000 for Al Otro Lado and the kids at the Tijuana shelter waiting for asking for asylum. Thanks to everyone who donated and shared. Because of you, these kids have resources. Now, because of you, the lawyers have resources.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got immigration civil rights tagged and at Joseph New York City. And I don't know who else that other person is. There's a couple other tags. Anyway, here is a clip from that podcast so you can hear who all is involved. Get your pencils and your paper out so you can write all the names down of the people that were involved at this border crossing.
Welcome back to Immigration Nation, everybody. I'm Kara Lynam, your host, and I am here at beautiful Studio Americana in Minneapolis recording this episode. And we're starting off with really actually me telling a story of what I experienced at the border. Back in December 2018, so a couple months ago, I went to Tijuana to represent asylum seekers. And that trip was something that was much more than I ever could have expected it could have been. So we had seen in the fall of 2018 and really earlier in 2018, too, lots of news coverage of these, what they're calling caravans, of asylum seekers from Central America who were making their way north. And they had gone to Tijuana in order to ask for asylum in the United States. So we had seen lots of coverage of this, and there was a call put out that they needed immigration attorneys to go to Tijuana to help these people that were now in Tijuana and were wanting to ask for asylum in the United States. But there were a lot of people, and they had really sort of diverse legal needs, so they wanted people to go. So in December 2018, I went down there with Christina Brown, with Ana Patrats Acosta, and Ava Benash, and we all went to Tijuana. And what happened there was really something I think will stick with me at least the rest of my life. I also just want to say, too, that when I talk about this, I'm talking about it from my experience and what I experienced. I don't speak for anyone else who was there and had their own separate experiences. So we went down there, and while we were there, we were volunteering with El Otro Lado, which is a great nonprofit. They're in Tijuana and in Southern California representing asylum seekers and all kinds of people with immigration legal needs. They are one of the main groups providing immigration legal services to people in Tijuana as they consider entering the United States to ask for asylum. So we were volunteering with that group, and while we were there, they said, okay, well, actually, two members of Congress are going to be here, and we have a group of people, of 15 people, ended up being 20, I'll get into more of that later, who are in serious danger here in Tijuana, and they need to ask, they've said they'd like to ask for asylum in the United States. All of us in our group, and we also were joined by Anna Joseph, Andrew Free, Isis, who is an attorney based out of Connecticut, the two members of Congress, Representative Nanette Barragan and Representative Jimmy Gomez, both out of the Los Angeles area, both members of the House of Representatives, and we're going to help these 15 asylum seekers present themselves at a port of entry. And you might think, well, it's a port of entry in the United States. You just walk up to it. And so, great. You know, you've asked for asylum. You said you're afraid of your country. You're moving on in the system. That's not how it's working in Tijuana. It's not how it's working then. It's not how it's working now. So the way the system is, and we saw this with our own eyes too, is that you, when you get to Tijuana and you say, okay, I want to ask for asylum, you're actually told to put your name on a list, and that list is run by asylum seekers and themselves, people who are on the list themselves run the list. And this list is really actually an illegal list. It is an illegal system that's called metering. And what this is you're on this list, and the U.S. government somehow magically conveys to Mexico, okay, we're going to take 40 asylum seekers today. We can process 40 people. Give us the next 40 people off your list. So then every morning at this plaza in Tijuana, the people congregate because they have their number and they think, maybe I'm going to be called today. And they go and they see if their number is going to be called. And if your number's called, and this was before the Remain in Mexico policy went into place, if your number was called, you were put on a bus and with you and your family, and you were brought into the United States, and you began your asylum application. You claimed your fear, inability, you couldn't return to your country, and that you began your process. But this list is long. This list is really long. People were waiting a couple months on this list. And there was a group of people in Tijuana that simply could not wait that long. So this group of people, the asylum seekers that was with us, and included 8 unaccompanied minors. This was a group of 8 17-year-olds who were living in a shelter in Tijuana who were wanting to ask for protection in the United States. They had suffered violence in their home countries. I think they were all from Honduras, and they needed to ask for asylum. But the problem is that unaccompanied minors, it's basically impossible for them to walk up to a port of entry and ask for asylum. They need people to help them do that. And that's because the U.S. government, of course, is not processing asylum seekers at ports of entry. We also had with us an activist, political activist, who was being targeted for violence in Tijuana by the same people he was fleeing in Honduras. So that was a really dangerous situation, and he had to go into the United States. He could not wait in Mexico to get to the front of this list. And of course, also with us, we had the mother and children who were in that what's now a viral photo of them when the mother and child were tear gassed at the border. That photo was taken over Thanksgiving weekend in 2018, and she was still in Mexico in December. And she was being targeted by right-wing groups from the United States, actually, who were going into Tijuana and targeting her and her family. So it wasn't safe for her in Tijuana. She had to go into the United States for her pro-home protection. So,
No, she did not. Maria, as I showed you, a woman who was targeted and tracked by these left progressive connected organizers of the caravan and funders of the caravan were the ones that were targeting her for transport into the United States. I showed you a video in which Paloma for Trump had captured the leader of Families Belong Together talking to her and making arrangements with her, which I think is encouraging somebody to cross undocumented, before she left, before she crossed. And in Mexico, in Tijuana, I also, and you know, because Paloma captured this and denounced it and said, hey, this woman is encouraging people to cross the border illegally. What she's doing is wrong. And because this woman caught her on video, the Families Belong Together lady, who's connected to Mark Lane, who was out there on waiting to facilitate the crossing of these migrants, they claimed at the border crossing that a right-wing person, somebody connected to the right, was crossing into Mexico and intimidating, and her life was in danger from Paloma for Trump. That is absolute hogwash. Okay? Paloma for Trump had been interviewing many of the people that were out there, and she had been helping that woman, helping her children. That woman was not scared of her. Do you remember that, Duke?
Yeah, vaguely. You know, and was that video that she showed when
yeah.
she was...
She didn't pose a threat.
No. She was all friendly and just like, hey, you know, and talking back and forth. And, you know, I didn't see anything that was like, made me think there's going to be a fight or violence or anything like that.
And she lives in Tijuana. She lives in Mexico. So it wasn't somebody from the United States that crossed into Tijuana to target her from the political right. That's all of that is nonsense. And I don't understand how a lawyer, right, feels comfortable saying this without checking it out, just putting it out there. It's part of an asylum claim that's being presented before the American government. You would think that it would matter. Here is a clip of a YouTube video where she is talking about being an immigration attorney and what she is fighting for.
Welcome back to Immigration Nation.
Carolina is going to share. She's an attorney.
I'm an immigration attorney. So I just wanted to share a little bit about what's happening with these family separations that are going on. And I'm sorry about having to yell. So we already know that over 700 children have already been separated from their parents. So this is happening. This is not something that's been proposed. It's happening now. The only thing that's stopping it happening on a massive scale is bed space. They've said as recently as yesterday at the White House that they consider this scalable. So once they have more beds, once they have more availability, family separations will become a massive scale operation. So this needs action now. This isn't something we can wait for. We need legislation, we need oversight, we need hearings, we need all of it. Because it's happening now, it's going to keep happening, and the only thing we can do to try to stop it is talk to our legislators. So, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for organizing this event. Keep up the fight. Thank you.
Okay, now here's another little video clip from her Twitter account where she was raising the money. It says, Trump's unlawful border policy prevents hundreds of unaccompanied children. Two children? Oh my God, it goes so fast. Hundreds of children in Tijuana. And you
everyone,
can help them.
It's Kara here in Chile, Minnesota, and I just want to say thank you for your donations. They really made a difference. In 18 days, we were able to raise over $100,000 because over 1,000 of you stepped up and said you wanted to help those kids in Tijuana. Because of your donations, El Otro Lado can immediately start funding a teacher, a trauma counselor, a lawyer, and enhanced security for the shelter. So you came from all over the country. You came from all walks of life. You gave all different donations. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Nicole Ramos, director of the Border Rights Project at El Otro Lado, and I'm here to thank you for your donation.
operations. We raised $100,000 in 18 days for the unaccompanied children that are here trapped in Tijuana to help provide them with very needed services, education, social support, and counseling. Thank you, everyone, for coming together to support these children.
Thank you for sharing, retweeting, donating. Thank you for caring about these kids who are stuck in Tijuana because of Trump's unlawful border policies. Thank you for donating and making a difference in the lives of all of these children. Thank you for helping us reach our goal to make a difference in the lives of all of these children.
Greetings from Mexico City. Thank you all so much for donating to the GoFundMe. It means so much for the children at the shelter.
This is Anna Joseph.
And for the lawyers who were able to witness people from all over the country care so much.
The last
much.
One was Christina Brown.
They contribute their dollars to this cause. It really, really was inspiring.
For everyone supporting on the ground in Tijuana, thank you. So as we had Christina Brown, we had Anna Joseph, we had Nicole Ramos, and you got to wonder, because they have to know. This was posted in May, right? The post that I just showed you where she's telling the story in this podcast. You know that she's probably heard them whining in the scores of articles and interviews and podcasts and things that where they've been talking about this, about being on a government watch list. You know that they have to know that they're being investigated for their involvement in a smuggling operation. You know that they've had to hear some of the allegations, like the things that we have brought you on this show and the things that have been said on Border Network News by Oscar El Blue Ramirez about the fake marriages, about the fake documents, about the kids that are being kidnapped by activists and coyotes, the unaccompanied minors that are being exploited in all of this. Does any of that give pause to these folks, I wonder, to continue to support this and raise over $100,000 to continue this operation?
This facade, boy, I'm shocked. I'm shocked. $100,000, you know, they could have spent about $100,000 for a little bit better video, you know? And it's just like, that $100,000 going basically into a well of a swirl and not really doing what it's doing with little accountability. I'm shocked, you know, that they could raise that amount of money and not really be accountable and not really have to report back to people, but then keep on and keep on raising money for a thing that's they're not even doing. It's just amazing.
You and I went to Tijuana and we couldn't find very many people that said that Al Otro Lado was helping them out.
That's right.
And we did, even though Nicole Ramos told us at the conference, told that room of people at the conference that she doesn't, or her organization doesn't practice law across the border.
Yep.
They don't have the right to do that, and they don't. And then, of course, I found evidence that they do and that they are doing that. We found evidence that they're doing a lot of unethical things, and I think that we're just scratching the surface of what's really going on and their love and solidarity with this group, Pueblos Sin Fronteras, that is definitely being on the top of the watch list, being investigated for their involvement with trafficking and smuggling. And here's one of the other lawyers. Her name is Anna Joseph. This is from her Facebook page. And here is the GoFundMe of Al Otro Lado that they showed in that video, just so you can get a better look at it, where they raised over $100,000. At this point, they had $102,000. This was started from in St. Paul.
Wow.
Right nearby. Instead of helping people that are in detention facilities, instead of helping the actual migrants. I mean, this is going to a group of lawyers. This is so deja vu for me. It reminds me so much of the lack of accountability in the lawyers groups that were at Standing Rock that raised millions of dollars that are now starting to bubble up and appear again, like the Water Protector Legal Collective, with regard to the activists in the Border Support Network. Folks, this is no bueno. Any way you slice it. And the messaging is all about how the government and Border Patrol and all these other people are committing crimes, but they're not. Mm-hmm. Even though they're the ones being investigated, they're unfairly targeted. the people in the government are the ones committing the crimes. Here's Anna Joseph's post where she tags Nicole Ramos. And what is she talking about, dude?
She says that U.S. Customs and Border Protection, in collaboration with Mexican federal officials, has made it almost impossible for the hundreds of unaccompanied minors in Tijuana to enter U.S. territory. Children are not allowed on the illegal list at the main port of entry. At the other ports of entry, CBP officials block the gates at which asylum seekers would express their fear of return, and the Mexican officials show up and threaten to arrest the migrants for loitering, and in the case of unaccompanied children, often put them in deportation proceedings. Last Monday, a group of lawyers, myself included, managed to occupy 15 asylum seekers, accompany 15 asylum seekers to a space that made it difficult for officials to dislodge them. The piece of path beyond the U.S.-Mexico border demarcation, but before the U.S. gate. Then we waited. Mexican officials couldn't pull people off the U.S. territory with the media watching. Two members of the U.S. Congress were also present, but the CBP refused to allow them to enter and substantiate CBP's claims that the detention center was at capacity. Eventually, after 17 hours, CBP let all the asylum seekers through the gate to be processed. This video is the moment that CBP erected gates blocking off that piece of path. Monday will have been a blip. The number of asylum seekers processed at that point of entry will go back to zero. We don't know when the hundreds of other unaccompanied minors will be let in, or if they'll be let in before their 18th birthdays, after which they lose certain immigration advantages. One of the reasons for the administration is bent on keeping them out. About 40 unaccompanied minors are waiting at a shelter, which I've worked closely. They lost two friends.
These are the kids that were staying in the streets, that refused to go to the Mexican government shelter at El Barretal. These are the people that were working directly with those activists like Joshua Nichols. These are the people that were putting their children's health and life at risk inside of Viento y Marea. These are the people that stayed in the scariest, most dangerous part of the city to defy Mexican government and authorities that were trying to provide them with humanitarian aid against the wishes of these activists who wanted to keep them all in one location so they could use them as human weapons and shields to protect the American activists, to protect their actions, and to go and try to shut down the border, which they did do on one occasion. So, folks, this woe is me victimization of themselves, turning the tables on the investigators and on the authorities, it is the modus operandi behind what they do. And they're all putting their eggs, they're hitching their star to this wagon of fools, the ship of fools, connected to Pueblos Sin Fronteras, because they've made their bed, and yes, now they just have to lay in it and continue to tell themselves, maybe even until they get to the gates of the jail, that they were doing something good and that they weren't doing anything that was illegal. But as I said on my last show, to the people of No More Deaths, to the groups involved in supporting Pueblos Sin Fronteras, continuing to do what Al Otro Lado, Pueblos Sin Fronteras, and many of these other groups in the Border Support Network I have shown you continue to do. Look out, guys. Watch out. Because, as I said, what I learned from Standing Rock is that the activists at the top, the ones that are connected to the Hollywood stars, the ones that are connected at the very top to all the money and the power and the politicians, they ain't going to jail like you. It's the poor Native Americans. It's the poor, hypocrite activists that end up getting thrown in the slammer and left behind by these lawyers who aren't going to care what happens to you. Where are we at? What's the next one? We got the...
We still have this last one in a second.
Anna Joseph tags. Yes. Let me show you the tag with the post here. Here are the other people that were tagged along with Nicole Ramos in that post. I'm assuming they're all lawyers, but these were all people that were there that day, supposedly. Christina Brown, Carol Einem, Sage Martin Moore, Andrew Free, Sandra Cordero, Pablo Badra, Ava Banak, and Albaricoque Iris Negron. Okay? We saw some of the overlap from the podcast, right? Mm-hmm. So let me share with you why the victimization and all of this plays out in all of these people, whether they're journalists that are complaining, whether they're activists, lawyers, etc. Recently, on May 28th, same day that Alex Mensing posted his, solidarity and love post, a Native American journalist was arrested. This is an article from the Daily Wire. And in this article, you will notice that the headline says, journalist claims she was abused, racially profiled by cops, and then the videos came out. Oopsie. Jenny Monet, a self-styled award, quote-unquote, award-winning journalist and Native American activist, claimed she was racially profiled both at a liquor store and by responding police officers and was the victim of police brutality. But released surveillance video from that night of her arrest for aggravated DUI in Santa Fe, New Mexico, captures the other side of the story, which includes Monet making obscene gestures at liquor store employees and screaming obscenities at law enforcement. Court documents obtained by KRQE News 13 say that the journalist was turned away by a liquor store in Santa Fe when she tried to buy two bottles of wine while allegedly appearing to be drunk. According to the surveillance videos obtained by this news network, Monet pulled up to the store, got inside, refused service. Quote, she then went back out into the car before she went back inside and started screaming and making obscene gestures toward the staff. After the encounter, both Monet and the employees at the liquor store called the police. And then she got even worse. She actually told the police that she was being racially profiled by the staff in the store, not that she was drunk and they didn't want to serve her, but that they were being racist because she has a brown face. And she even made a little circle around her face going like, can't you see? I am a brown woman. And then she refused to take the sobriety test and started yelling at the police, I'm not walking any effing line for you. Do you hear me? And she said, you effing fat fingered effer, you effing racist mother effer, and you effing white supremacist. She lost it. She started screaming repeatedly, police brutality, police brutality, said one of the officers. She told the deputies multiple times that she was an award-winning journalist.
That's right.
And just look her up. And she even threatened to sue KRQE, the news station that reported all of this coverage, because they disclosed what really happened.
Yeah.
Despite all of this, she is sticking to her guns that she was neither drunk nor that she was wrong. It is truly astounding. Here's the video clip from KRQE News 13.
A journalist who champions Native American rights says she was racially profiled when a liquor store refused to sell her wine. She also claimed police brutality when deputies showed up to the scene because she was causing a scene. News 13's Madeline Schmidt shows you the video of the arrest, which does contain some strong language.
As any journalist like Jenny Monet knows, there's two sides to every story. Today, she told us her side, while deputy lapel video tells us another.
Jenny Monet was poised as she spoke at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe this morning.
And that's journalism today.
A totally different look from last Friday.
You racist mother white supremacist.
when she was arrested for DWI at a Santa Fe liquor store on Old Pecos Trail after the store refused to sell her wine, claiming she appeared drunk.
Sheriff's Department records show that the surveillance cameras here at the liquor store captured her rolling up to the store, getting out of the driver's seat of the car, and then going inside. And once she was in there, surveillance cameras captured her making obscene gestures towards the staff.
We obtained that footage showing exactly what was described. Immediately after the confrontation, both she and the staff called for deputies.
Okay. Have you been drinking at all tonight?
No.
Okay. How come I can smell a really strong odor of alcohol?
I don't know. I've not been drinking.
She claimed she was racially profiled.
How are they racially profiling you is what I'm trying to get at.
Because I'm a brown woman. Do you not see that?
Monet refused field sobriety tests and grew angry.
Listen,
I'm not walking
stop.
Any line for you.
Okay.
You hear me? Listen. I am not walking any line for you.
Then she was arrested.
Police brutality!
Today at the event, we asked Monet what happened.
I am one of a majority of people who are victimized by this kind of racial profiling that exists on a daily basis.
Monet says she's hired attorneys.
Neither was I drinking or driving at the time, and we're confident that the evidence that stands in my favor will vindicate me.
And she threatened to sue us over this story.
I'm an award-winning journalist. You can look me up. Jenny Monet, go ahead. The fact that I'm an award-winning journalist and that I said that to these officers and that they didn't even run an ID check on me or check my name or even validate the fact that I had called them for help.
Monet was charged with aggravated DWI because she refused to do a breathalyzer test. She was also charged with resisting arrest. Madeline Schmidt, KRQE News 13.
We do want to tell you that Jenny Monet did work for News 13 as a reporter about 20 years ago. She has not been affiliated with KRQE since then.
You're listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. I bet not.
Yeah, really.
Now, you know who else says all the time, I am an award-winning organization. I come from an award-winning organization. Nicole Ramos.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. Almost all the time that she introduces herself or talks about her organization, of course, all of this in relation to the allegations that she is doing things that are not ethical and that she has been caught, her and her organization have been caught practicing law without a license in Mexico and making fake marriages and making false documents for people to use in their asylum claims to defraud the American government as part of a smuggling operation. And her contacts with Pueblos Sin Fronteras and all of these organizations like Border Angels and No More Deaths, all of them being investigated, is to say, I am an award-winning organization.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that this is how famous I am? How dare you insinuate that I am not important? But you know, I've showed you that the same folks working with these organizations are also the ones that give them the awards. The people that are working with this massive network of people that organized the shenanigans that we saw for over a year here in North Dakota, costing taxpayers over $30 million and causing damage to the environment and all sorts of horrible things. They just wreak havoc wherever they go, and they support each other to the end, and they have media allies, and they have academic allies, and they have folks that are ready to say that they are award-winning whatevers, okay? And, you know, Jenny Monet was at the Institute of American Indian Arts. Here is her, like, bio thing from an event that she was speaking at. You want to read that, Duke?
The parts I can.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to returning to the Institute of American Indian Arts campus this Thursday to discuss journalism and my year-long investigation of violence in Indian country. Hope to see some familiar faces there. It has a poster that says, Jenny Monet, the crisis in convening Indian, the crisis in covering Indian country.
Yeah.
Thursday, April 11th.
Now, let me read you her bio, okay? It says that Jenny Monet is an award-winning journalist who writes about indigenous rights and injustice for such publications as the LA Times, The Guardian, the Center for Investigative Reporting, and others. She also writes for Yes Magazine. Jenny received top honors for her coverage at the Dakota Access Pipeline battle, in which she chronicled the movement for six consecutive months, resulting in her arrest and ultimately her acquittal. Jenny is a tribal citizen of the Pueblo of Laguna and divides her time between New York and the indigenous world. Let me just stop right there and tell you that as I have learned from watching these folks that were at the Standing Rock thing, these so-called media people, many of whom popped out of nowhere and created their own media platforms and live streaming platforms out of thin air and had no background, no training, no skills in journalism or even speaking or writing, I learned that these journalists, and I say that in air quotes, were really activists that were using the journalism title as an excuse for what they were doing with the protesters, for what the actions that they were taking with the protesters. And make no mistake, each different type of protester, including the journalist protesters, had their role to play, okay? If you haven't figured it out, there is groups of lawyers, there are groups of journalists, and they all had a role to play. In the Dakota Access Pipeline, part of that role was to start to create this narrative that journalists are losing their rights, that journalism is being criminalized in America, that your rights to free speech and free press are non-existent, or at least they were at Standing Rock. People should be outraged. People should stop this immediately. You're hearing the echoes of that now, as I have shown you these folks continuously tell you, Border Patrol are the criminals. Interpol are the ones that are wrong here. Everybody else is wrong. They are not wrong. And this Native American journalist says that in her bio continues, the presentation will address the issues of Native Americans suffering from chronic misrepresentation and erasure by an established press, a crisis, a word not used enough to describe Native Americans' efforts against invisibility that is stoked by the stark absence of indigenous journalists in newsrooms and further complicated by an indigenous media largely owned by tribal governments and entities. Monet will talk about why media representation matters in understanding important issues such as violence against indigenous women in Indian country, an issue central to the journalists' current investigation. Now let's look at the comments of people. Who is in her comments? Who is up in her comments? Why, Tony Cervantes, the other journalist who was out there, documentary filmmaker, photographer, who was stopped at the U.S.-Mexico border with Myron Dewey of Digital Smoke Signals, another so-called journalist, documentary filmmaker, and drone pilot that was questioned by Department of Homeland Securities and CBP for his involvement in the caravans, in escorting people and crossing the border and working with the Border Support Network. That Tony Cervantes, because she was also at Standing Rock. Who else is in there? Raymond L. Kingfisher, the guy that was with Nathan Phillips at the Indigenous People's March, the people that helped bring you the Nathan Phillips hoax. You got Phyllis Young, one of the organizers of the Standing Rock nightmare that we had for over a year. But lest you think that that is just a coinkydink, here are more people from her page. Here are some of the other journalists that were, journalists again in quotes, that were there. Journalists and documentary filmmakers, Unicorn Riot are pictured here. And they're screening, what is it? Black Snake Killers.
Oh, yeah.
And Lorenzo Serna and Chris Schiano were at the Allied Media Conference. This is from June 18 of 2018. We were there at the very same time.
Exactly.
And we exchanged words with him because they didn't want to have any other people on their panel.
Yep.
That were at Standing Rock. By the way, he claimed, Serna claimed that he is Chicano, so
he's indigenous.
That's enough.
It's enough.
Also, by the way, they were there. Unicorn Riot was there. Mm-hmm. They were probably practically attached at the hip of LaDonna.
Yeah.
And some of these main organizers of the Standing Rock Nightmare. And they were well funded by these groups. Here is Kingfisher and Monet and Dan Nanimkin, one of the Native Americans that went and sold ceremony at Burning Man after Standing Rock at a protest.
Yep.
And this is from her page, as you can see. She's talking about the protest that the march that took place in Washington, D.C. after the camps closed mm-hmm. in 2017. And I showed you that a lot of the people that went with Kingfisher were involved in the framing, the crime that took place by many of the activists involved in organizing Standing Rock against Kathleen Bennett and her mother, Mary Trujillo. And I want you to see that she is very much connected to all of the people that were at the very top of the food chain in terms of the nightmare at Standing Rock, including Jane Fonda. As you know, Jane Fonda, Frances Fisher, Lily Tomlin, and many other actors from Hollywood made their astroturfing move on top of the Native American protest that was Standing Rock. And Monet got arrested there. She got arrested at Standing Rock, as it said in her bio. This is a post about her arrest from Standing Rock. You want to read this one too?
Facebook family. Thank you for all your kind words and show of support following my acquittal Friday. There's been a ton of process, and I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to author another piece about how we got to this point. This image is one that I captured on the day I was arrested near Standing Rock, along with 75 others, including Julian Bear Runner, pictured center. He was my co-defendant, meaning we had our separate trials heard simultaneously before the same judge. And by the lamest fate, my evidence submitted to the court by my counsel was used against him without warning. I'm not an attorney, but everything about witnessing this play out in the day-long proceedings just didn't feel right. Most directly, the obvious disparity in legal representation. The truth is, my attorneys and I had been preparing for June 1st, 2018 for months. Julian, he said he had only met his attorney the night before. Of course, there is an immediate guilt I'm confronting over my apparent privilege.
Mm.
That press freedom and freedom of assembly are handled two very different ways, despite protections under the same First Amendment. There's also the other constitutional right acknowledging treaties as a supreme law of the land. Another point which Julian reminded us during that day in court. As I continue to analyze this experience, like everything I encountered at Standing Rock, I plan to formally chronicle it because that was and continues to be my role in this movement.
In this moment.
While I may have been granted certain concessions as a journalist versus a water protector, it is because of the distinction that I've always felt a direct call to duty to bring us closer to understanding this indigenous timeline. What I humbly believe is representative of the more than three dozen dispatches, I am proud to say I filed from the movement itself.
And then there's a picture.
And here's a picture.
And it's got Holyoke Lafferty there as well. And mm-hmm. you see that Water is Life beanie that we saw all the people came with the veteran stand for Standing Rock wearing.
Mm-hmm.
They were all part of that group that was connected to the security that took over, that eventually expelled Mary Trujillo and Kathleen Bennett and framed an innocent Oglala Lakota woman. And of course, I want to go back to scene 4 because I want to show you Can you just go back to that slide really quick? I'm sorry. I hate to keep doing this to her. Notice that Joy Brunn of the Indigenous Environmental Network comments there and says, Holy Elk met her attorney 2 days today, had 2 weeks to prepare, no argument regarding the treaty. So the Indigenous Environmental Network, Joy Brunn, Dallas Goldtooth, Candy Mossett White, Tom Goldtooth, all of those folks are also very heavily invested and involved with the campaigns, including the violent clashes with police, the campaigns to victimize themselves in the media and make it appear that, you know, these very, very unfair things are happening to Indians in Indian country so that they can make money off of it. But I wanted to show you her apology for the recent arrest, okay? And this is a sorry, not sorry type of apology. She says, friends, family, supporters of members of Indian country and the greater journalist community, please accept my sincere apology for any embarrassment or disappointment I may have caused you regarding news circulating from my wrongful arrest and detainment. Well, if it was wrongful, then why would you apologize for embarrassing mm-hmm. someone? Friday, April 5th, because you know it looks really terrible, and the video captures it.
Yeah, you're yelling at the cops.
You know it looks terrible.
Yeah, you looked horrible.
And it says, Friday, April 5th, 2019, Santa Fe County, New Mexico. It is not lost on me the irony of how I am often writing and discussing the crisis for Native Americans overcome at chronic negativity in the news media, and yet here I am, central to it. To every parent or grandparent raising Indigenous girls and boys, I wish that night away. And as I stand in my truth, I look forward to seeing those of you on the other side of the storm who are brave and courageous enough to understand what happened on April 5th is a story not about belligerent drinking. Really? That's what it looked like. It's not about belligerent drinking, but rather legitimate outrage in how quickly and persistently brown women like me are disbelieved, gaslighted, and presented with microaggressions at seemingly every turn. The mental coping of many months and weeks and now days has been incredibly taxing. I am seeking proper attention and care to manage during these difficult times, and I'm grateful for those of you who have reached out to express your support. It means the world. Thank you. And if you scroll down, you will see there are some people that comment. Oh, no, I was wrong about that. It was the other one. It was the other post. It was the Joy Brunn one. Duke, can I get your thoughts real quick on what she is saying? Because how do you extrapolate that what you just saw and heard that is captured on the cameras of the establishment and on the cop lapel camera where she's screaming? Like, couldn't you, if you were just feeling like this was a racist liquor store, couldn't you go to another non-racist liquor store where you would get served? Or did you just lose it because you were drunk and you knew that no place would serve you because you were too drunk to
be
served?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen people like this, of people that have standing in the community. When they're arrested by the cops for DWIs, they're like, you need to look up who I am, and I'm friends with a chief of police. You better call him up right now. She reminds me of this guy who was a school board member. He was also my insurance guy who got picked up by Fargo cops, and he got picked up for a DWI, and he demanded that a cop call up the chief of police, and he gets right over there to where they're trying to arrest him and vouch for him because he's an important person. Reminds me of the same sort of thing, you know. And granted, I can understand the frustration with dealing with cops, you know, because, you know, she's a brown woman. But, you know, just the clips of the video, you know, unless it was heavily edited and she was calm all the time and just blew up a few times and they caught that on video, she looked belligerent. She was throwing profanities out there. She was doing a lot of things that were disrespectful, you know, and, you know, I think that was uncalled for, you know. And so her defense that she is just fed up with everybody, fed up with the way she's being treated, and she's just being targeted as a journalist and, you know, all this sort of stuff.
I've seen it before, and I'm telling you, it's a ploy.
Yep.
It's something that they use. It's something that all of these activists have been using. The police are being unfair and blah, 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 blah. When in fact, they're doing something fishy. They're doing something weird. And by the way, we all know that that last child camp was a setup. I mean, all of these clashes that happened at Standing Rock, we came to learn that they had all of these people prepared and they had documentary filmmakers there, photographers there to film it, to live stream it so that they could tell their story from their angle and criminal and say that the police were being criminals to them. But in truth, this was all set up. It was just like a movie set. And the Last Child Camp was the most obvious one of all of them because they set up a camp on private property. It was almost like they were waiting to get arrested. They wanted to get arrested. They knew they would get arrested and they didn't care. And I've shown you that over many of the shows. It was just a who's who of people that still needed to get arrested so the Water Protector Legal Collective could use their fraud scheme to collect more money off of arrests. And every time that they had one of these things, they were like, fundraise off of it and send us more money. And people would. Mm-hmm. And, she got arrested so did Phyllis Young's daughter, Washday Wee Young. So did Chase Iron Eyes. A lot of people ended up getting themselves arrested. Chase Iron Eyes' wife got arrested earlier on. Then he got arrested. You know, they made sure to have their key people, activists, that were going to get fake arrested for fake actions, for fake reasons. They didn't need to get arrested. They just did. And then, of course, they make bank off of the fact that they got arrested. Washday Wee, and the same native faces they put in front of lawsuits. They put them in front of, like, Washday Wee was part of the lawsuit against Trump, right? Washday Wee got arrested. Washday Wee is Phyllis Young's daughter. Here's her post about getting arrested along with this Jenny Monae. And she says, what did she say, dude?
Got our crew back and intact. Wopala Risa for transport. Con Air, they said, LOL. After seeing our changes and their affidavit, which has some untruths to it, I want to give mine. After the cops surrounded us on the hill, we formed a circle and sang prayer songs. I did not resist, nor did anyone around me on the east side. The cop directly in front of me with a face mask on asked if I would like to leave. I shook my head no. I had seen Jenny Monae, reporter, try to leave when she told them she was media, but they nabbed her anyways. I told the cop, I'm here in peace, and I'm praying for you and your babies too. He said, give me your hand, please. I don't want to do this the hard way. I gave him my hand. He turned me around and put zip ties on me. Then he led me to where the women were sitting. The officials made chain gang down the hill so we wouldn't fall. The whole time the cops huddled by the fire. They were talking, visiting with us. Occasionally they would adjust one of our hats, jackets, glasses, scarves. Then one of the cops caught his pants on fire, standing too close to the fire. The other cops were kind of teasing him, low-key, laughing. I was sitting right there and said, polyester, brother, it'll do it every time. Next time, wear coveralls. Then us guys all laughed, even some of the cops. In my mind, there could not be the same officials.
These could not be the same officials from October.
There was one cop I know with a video camera. I kept zooming in on us. He kept filming us on the ground in our zip ties, and he would come real close to us, to me. Finally, I said, I remember you, baby boy, and blew him a kiss. Us girls all laughed. On the van, we watched as they took the barricades down to let us through. It's hard for me to read this very small.
And I think that they think that this is a joke. They're all laughing, having a good time. They don't take this seriously. Then we all got put on the bus. They had their air conditioning on. They told us to sing Wheels on the Bus. One young man said, this is treaty land. The cop said, tell me about it. So he started to recite the 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty. We all started to Akisha and Ilili. Every time we did that, they looked terrified. Then we sang the AIM song. Remember, AIM is very important in all of this. They let us on the bus in the garage. They left us on the bus in the garage, which was okay because the bus was turned off and no more cold air. And then all the cops and law enforcement started to eat and drink in front of us. Psyops. Two women behind me kept asking to go to the bathroom. One finally peed her pants. After about 2 to 3 hours on the bus, we got put in cages. We sat in the cages about another 2 hours. I know a lot of it was psyops and mental games, but there was genuine compassion at cops, and I want to acknowledge them. Thank you to Captain Dave, Dylan, Lemoyne, and Esmeralda. Chris is kind of iffy, but I suppose I can say thank you to him too, even though he was making fun of my tattoo and said I got hives from wearing goggles. Actually, his words were, "Bet you thought you were going into battle today, huh? Now you got hives. I'm charged with criminal trespass for standing on unceded treaty land, now illegally owned by an oil corporation. I'm also charged with participating in a riot for praying and singing in a nonviolent manner. It's all good. I'm not afraid. I have relatives. By the way, thanks to everyone who left messages. My anxiety got me thrown in solitary. Sound pounding on the door. Sure pounding on the door to get back to my cell block. Lol. Crazy experience. I have nothing to hide and nothing to incriminating here. I'm just a mama bear with four babies standing for our water, standing up for what I believe." Okay. So I wanted to show you that Jenny Monet has a media perspective, and she is going out there to be a messenger of this media perspective at different universities. She's constantly speaking. It reminds me of, Nicole Ramos is speaking at different universities, how these Border Support Network people are speaking at different universities. You'll constantly see them talking to people, giving their perspective. Look at this post from May 12th, in which they're with NPR Story Lab Workshop and the Association of Independent Radio. And they're, you know, giving their indigenous perspective. And if you look in the comments, one of the people commenting there is currently at, or was recently at, the camps, Texas camps, Border Support Network camps, with the Carrizo Come Crudo tribe, Juan B. Mancias. And she's one of the lawyers from Water Protector Legal Collective, Michelle Cook. She's one of the people from the Water Protector Legal Collective now involving herself with the Border Support Network. And how the victimization of the Native American journalist was used at Standing Rock is that they talked about the fact that journalism is not a crime. Here is Jenny Monet holding a sign saying that in a post from May 3rd of 2018, where she's talking about how she got arrested during the worst year on record for the world press freedom and now is facing a trial on June 1st of 2018. She says, "Without safe journalism, there is no information. Without information, there's no freedom. Today and every day stand for press freedom. Journalism is not a crime." And you can see in the comments that you've got Mark Tilson, one of the people from IP3, about halfway down into the comments. And then right after Mark Steiner's comment is none other than the kingpin that was framed Kathleen Bennett, gave false testimony to the Morton County Police, and was working with the Water Protector Legal Collective, Christina Hollenbeck.
Wow.
There she is right after Mark Steiner's comment. And she says, "Sending you love. We'll be there to have your back." She's also right next to Akichita Hoxida, who is none other than former felon for running meth in Iowa, Menape Lemaire. George Lemaire is his real name. Hmm. He was one of the headsmen that also helped to frame Kathleen Bennett. And at the very bottom, you see Phyllis Young also sending her love. "Love and prayers to Jenny. We will be there," she says. So she's got a lot of support from many of these people, but she also was at the reunion. The reunion in 2017 for the Standing Rock nonsense that happened. She posted about it saying, "Parting shot from the week-long No Dapple reunion. Thank you, Washday Wee Young, Killy Bailey Letta, Stephanie Shar, along with Phyllis Young and LaDonna Allard. for knowing when to bring the people together. I don't know about that. I don't think they knew how to bring the people together, and it was not a good thing for North Dakota. But they like to celebrate it as if it was, because they successfully defrauded people out of millions of dollars. And one of the media mouthpieces that they used was Jenny Monet. In this post, she is sharing from Morton County Sheriff's Department on February 21st, she tags supporter Doug McLean. She says, when I contacted No Dapple supporter Doug McLean last week about using his photo for one of my articles, he was very concerned about how the image would be used. He did not want it to be covered in any negative way. And we know that Doug McLean worked with closely with the media. He was one of the people that was in the Border Support Network on the watch list as well. They've been using it, he says, since February 16, two Fridays after posting my article. Doug, I love you. If you've okayed this, thanks. So they're tight.
Oh, yeah.
She's also close to Holyoke Lafferty. And another person that helped to put Mary Trujillo in the hospital and get her taken away from her daughter, Kathleen Bennett, who gave false statements to the police in Morton County, fake medic Vanessa Bolin. She's also now doing rescue work. She's also now working with missing and murdered Indigenous women. There is Holyoke Lafferty, and right behind her is Vanessa Bolin, two of the people involved, another two of the people involved. How many of the people that were involved in the crime against Kathleen Bennett that originally brought me to investigating these people do you think Monet has on her page? I don't know. It seems like a lot.
Yep.
Here in this next post, she tags this woman, Ranmila Cody, who is a Navajo model. And she says, who needs Jane? She's talking about Jane Fonda, who was at Standing Rock, Shailene Woodley, Jesse Jackson. And I don't know who Bonnie is, but she knows all the stars that mm-hmm. were there. And she's connected to all the people that were connected to those stars, to those propagandists, to the people that created this show, this spectacle at Standing Rock. She was connected to all of them. And this is the messaging she used about what the police did to her back then. The humiliation she posted on April 15, 2018. It states in this excerpt of an article, I'm assuming that was written about her arrest at Standing Rock, Monet, who is a member of the Laguna Pueblo tribe, said she was strip searched after her arrest. But some white female protesters who were arrested at the same time were spared the humiliation. Although LaFleur Vetter said she was also strip searched. Mm. So a white lady says, they strip searched me.
Yeah.
But she was trying to use that angle of the racism mm-hmm. with her arrest at Standing Rock as well. And here is a post that she made that connects her to AIM in March 2nd of 2017. You can see a bunch of people. There's her, I'm assuming that's her holding up her fist and holding the AIM flag. She says, I stopped at Wounded Knee on my way to catch a flight to Honduras. She went to Honduras in 2017, wow. Folks. It was my 44th anniversary of the start of the 1973 occupation led by the American Indian Movement. Water protectors from Standing Rock had packed into a bus to observe the occasion, many finding solace in honoring the Indigenous Resistance campaign. Here's the start of my collection of stories about the Miniwichoni message spreading far and wide from the No Dapple battlefields that were raised by military police a week ago, Thursday. And then she quotes some dude. So she's at Wounded Knee, South Dakota. Hmm. So again, we see the AIM flags and the AIM people very heavily entrenched in the Border Support Network. We know they are involved as well. And I'm just showing you all the connections to the folks that do this. Here's a post from when they were the governor's assistant, Levi Bachmeier, was talking to people about the evacuation plans for the camp and promoting the kidnapper, Melanie Stoneman, who is pictured right next to him. So, you know, all of the criminals. The only one that I didn't see in one of these pictures was Bill Running Fisher, practically.
Yep.
And next, I want to show you that Monet's journalism is her excuse for her real work, which is activism. Jenny posted on April 15, 2018, tensions are building in the drawn-out confrontation between police and protesters, and Monet could soon find herself caught in the crackdown. She had not stayed in the restricted area that police set aside for the press because she said it was too far away from where protesters and police had gathered. So she didn't say in the safe space because she wanted to get closer. And a lot of these journalists that are being questioned about their involvement in crossing people and that just say, I'm just a journalist. I'm just a lawyer. I'm just a justa. They're saying this to cover for their real connections to the people funding, the people organizing, the people smuggling, the people committing fraud, the people that are doing the bad things. And Jenny, just in case you wondered, is also friends with a recent scandal magnate, Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth.
Wow.
Here she is pictured with LaDuke in October of 2017, trying to persuade her to stay a few more days at the Society of Environmental Journalists. Oh, Environmental Journalists?
Oh, really?
Conference. Hmm. She was unconvincing, by the way. And there's Doug McLean in the comments. Would you love to have been there? I would have loved to have been there. How long does this event run? So, you know, they stay connected. They're in the same circles. Just goes to show you, birds of a feather.
Yep.
Caravan together.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we're seeing now, folks, for you to understand. Please share this show so that people can understand the connections and how they're using this messaging to victimize themselves in the eyes of the left so they can continue to be involved in this border support network, hurting our country, hurting Mexico, and hurting the immigration laws, the immigration system, the judicial system in the United States. That's all I've got for you tonight. Thanks for being with us here on A Mexican Crossing Lines with your hosts, Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You've been listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Buenas noches y gracias.